أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين.
الله
صل على محمد وعلى آله. Monday the 29th of October 2001. We were discussing Surah Al-Hijr last time. And what, last week we studied the concept of Iblis and how he tempts and seduces into sinning. And what his promises were, how he obtained that from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And what is the wisdom and logic behind Allah allowing him and granting him permission to do what he did. We are in verse number 44. وَإِنَّ جَهَنَّمَ لَمَوْعِدُهُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ لَهَا سَبْعَةُ أَبْوَابٍ لِكُلِّ بَابٍ مِّنْهُمْ جُزُءٌ مَقْسُومٌ. And that the Jahannam, that is the fire of hell, is their destination, all of them. Now talking about all of them are Iblis and those who decide to follow him, those who choose to make Iblis their master. So all of them will be in Jahannam. لَهَا سَبْعَةُ أَبْوَابٍ. It has seven doors. Now, the concept of Bab, you have here in the Quran saying the Jahannam has seven doors, right? This is not talking of levels. There are levels in Jahannam and there are doors. Most Mufassirin, and you will find even Jannah, when it comes to Jannah, it has eight doors. Jahannam has seven doors, right? Most Mufassirin treat this as doors, as in physical doors, entrances, gates, whatever you call it. Ayatollah Tabatabai has a slightly different way of looking at it. And he says, giving evidence from hadith. You see, there are hadith that there is a door for sabirin, that means those who are patient. That there is a door for the martyrs, that means those who are shaheed, right? In Jannah, we're talking of Jannah now, right? And so on. Now, Ayatollah Tabatabai believes that this is not a physical door. For there will be many doors and gates to Jannah. It can't just be eight doors to Jannah, right? Each castle having its own door. So let's look at it from, he says, from another perspective. That a door is an entrance to something. So when I want to enter this building, there is a door, right? He says, when it comes to Jannah and Jahannam, it is the means that will take you there. So when you have, for example, lying or ghibat, right? This is a door. Now if ghibat is a door to Jahannam, that means the action of ghibat is something that would lead you to Jahannam. Right? And so he describes it in this manner, that the door is not a physical door, that Jannah does not have only eight doors and Jahannam seven doors as such. It can have as many. As far as numbers are concerned, it does not make sense to limit something so huge where billions of people will be there to only seven or eight. And so he says that these are actually specific ways and means by which we are taken there. So when you say that the Jahannam has seven doors, that means there are seven specific things that will lead you to Jahannam. Right? Other than that, will not necessarily take you straight to Jahannam. But these seven are so bad that they will take you straight to Jahannam. And when it comes to Jannah, there are eight. Now he comes up with also a logical and rational evidence behind it. He says that, do you know why there are eight avenues that lead to Jannah and there are only seven avenues that lead to Jahannam? He says, because the one and only one that can only take you to Jannah, it cannot take you to Jahannam, is your aql. If you use the aql properly, then the aql will only take you to Jannah, and therefore it is a door to paradise. This aql can never ever take you to Jahannam. It will be other things, whether it is your wishes, your whims, your desires, your temptations that will take you to Jahannam, but never your aql. And that is why the difference between Jannah and Jahannam is that Jannah has 8 doors and Jahannam has 7 doors, because this 8th door of aql can never take you to Jahannam. This is his argument of Ayatullah Tabatabai. And he's put it quite well. Because the 7 doors are not only sins, are even sometimes the senses in which we live in, you know. The hawas, you know, the 5 senses we have, that if we are obsessed by these senses, or obsessed, you know, to satiate these senses, then these will take us to Jahannam. Whereas aql will only take somebody to Jannah, to paradise. Right? So the concept of doors, literally translated as gates or doors, in this verse and in ahadith, is actually the means, the way that will take us to Jahannam or Jannah, inshallah. Right. After that, this is talked about Jahannam, that Shaitan and Iblis and everything will go to Jahannam. And then we talk about Jannah. In Surah Al-Hijr here, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is then describing Jannah, where he says, إِنَّ الْمُتَّقِينَ فِي جَنَّاتٍ وَعُيُونَ وَدْخُلُوهَا بِسَلَامٍ آمِنِينَ وَنَزَعْنَا مَا فِي صُدُورِهِمْ مِنْ غِلٍّ إِخْوَانًا عَلَى سُرُرٍ مُتَقَابِلِينَ لَا يَمَسُّهُمْ فِيهَا نَصَبٌ وَمَا هُمْ مِنْهَا بِمُخْرَجِينَ نَبِّئْ عِبَادِي أَنِّي أَنَا الْغَفُورُ الرَّحِيمُ وَأَنَّ عَذَابِي هُوَ الْعَذَابُ الْأَلِيمُ. Now these 4 or 5 verses that talk about Jannah. We have already talked about paradise in some, not in detail, but very passing. We have talked about Jannah, and here again is a description of paradise. إِنَّ الْمُتَّقِينَ فِي جَنَّاتٍ وَعُيُونَ. That those who were pious, those who had exercised taqwa, are in gardens and springs. Uyun is plural of Ayn. Ayn is a spring, Uyun is springs. Jannatin wa Uyun. Udkhuluha bisalamin aminin. Enter it with peace and safe and secure always. Wanaza'na ma fi sudurihim min ghillin ikhwanan ala sururin mutaqabilin. Right? Now, wanaza'na fi sudurihim min ghillin. That means that we cleansed their hearts from any, I don't know how they've translated the ghil. Ghil is that kind of attitude that we have. You know, sometimes we have an attitude problem against other people, be it based on culture, on race, on tribe, on family, on place of origin, you name it. Any kind of prejudice, that small prejudice that exists, Allah says that that last iota of prejudice that may be there is cleansed when we enter heaven. Now, understand that in heaven and in paradise, there is uniformity all around. That everybody will enter it young, everybody strong and handsome and beautiful, everybody white, no color prejudice, nothing. Right? That is why if you remember the hadith, where Bilal was seen, Bilal saw an old lady crying outside the house of the Holy Prophet. And he asked the old lady, "Why are you crying?" She said, "I just heard the Prophet telling me that you will never enter heaven. You will never enter paradise." Bilal said, "Now how could that be? How can the Prophet say that?" He went inside to the Prophet and complained to the Prophet. So how can you tell this old lady who is such a pious lady that she will not enter heaven? So the Holy Prophet told Bilal, "Bilal, you will also not enter heaven." And so Bilal joined the old lady outside, started weeping for himself as well. And then Imam Ali alayhi salam came there. And Imam Ali alayhi salam started asking them, "What is happening? Why are you crying?" And when they reported, Imam Ali Islam said, "You should understand what the Prophet meant, that when you, the old lady, will enter heaven, you will no longer be old. So you will not enter in the state you are in now. When you enter heaven, you will be young. And Bilal, when you enter heaven, you will be white, not black." So that hadith is there And this here hadith is saying that وَنَزَعْنَا عَنْ صُدُورِهِمْ غِلِّنْ. Every little prejudice, iota of prejudice, will no longer be there. That prejudice can arise from so many things. It arises from wealth, it arises from nobility or descendants, it arises from knowledge, it arises from strength. You know, I mean, that prejudice, care, I am better or I am different, forget better. I am different. Right? All that prejudice will go away. إِخْوَانًا عَلَى سُرُرٍ مُتَقَابِلِينَ. They will all be brothers sitting on couches in front of each other and, you know, across each other, talking to each other. لَا يَمَسُّهُمْ فِيهَا نَصَبٌ وَمَا هُمْ مِنْهَا بِمُخْرَجِينَ. They shall not have to toil. They will never get tired in there. There is no question of getting tired or toiling, right? Nothing, no work to be done. وَمَا هُمْ مِنْهَا بِمُخْرَجِينَ. Nor shall they ever be removed from paradise. نَبِّ عِبَادِي أَنِّي أَنَا الْغَفُورُ الرَّحِيمُ. Tell my worshippers that I am the one who can forgive and is merciful. وَأَنَّ عَذَابِي هُوَ الْعَذَابُ الْأَلِيمُ. And that my chastisement, my punishment is the most severe punishment. You see, this is the most difficult thing here. We have to understand this. Islam is a concept, Islam is a religion of balance. Everything has its own balance. We can never tip the balances by believing in one extreme, never. Everything is about a balanced life. Whether it is doing good, whether it is doing something, you know, everything has to be very balanced. Our belief is that Islam was sent down as a balanced religion. So whilst we have that Allah is so merciful that He loves His worshipper and His creation 70 times more than a mother loves her son. 70 times more. 70 times, what would the mother not do for us? To forgive a mother would find it so easy. And it is even easier for Allah to forgive us. Imagine that if Allah loves somebody so much, 70 times what a mother can love a child, then how merciful that Allah is. But if I continue doing things without balance, just believing in that particular fact, that Allah will forgive me, He's so merciful, and I forget, or rather I disregard without giving any consideration to the fact that He has promised that if I disobey Him, He will punish me. He has the right. So whilst talking about Jannah, He says, tell my worshippers that I am the merciful Lord. I will forgive. But also tell them that my punishment is very severe. So don't bank hopes on only my mercy and my forgiveness. Remember that if I have to punish, my punishment is very severe. It is this aspect that we must understand properly of our belief. That we cannot take things for granted just because we were born Shias, just because we seem to be practicing a lot of practices that are related to Shias, just because we have been brought up in a culture that says, ke bhai aap Shia tarike, whatever we do, tawassul che, shafa'at che, all these concepts, we apply these concepts and bingo, the Jannah is ours. It doesn't work. Because like there are verses that Allah is merciful and that Allah is all-forgiving and Allah is oft-forgiving, like those verses, similarly there are verses in the Holy Quran that says, فَمَنْ يَعْمَلْ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ خَيْرًا يَرَى وَمَنْ يَعْمَلْ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ شَرًا يَرَى. Any ayat of small, you know, smallest, good deed you will see it, bad deed you will see it. We can't run away from these things. So imagine Allah giving you good news about Jannah at the same time, warning you, beware. That whilst I am all merciful and all forgiving, remember, my punishment is equally just as. Right? Now, are there any questions before I proceed? Because we are entering into a new topic now when it comes to Nabbi Dhaif Ibrahim. وَنَبِّئْهُمْ عَنْ Dhaif Ibrahim. This is a new topic on the life of Prophet Ibrahim, and the whole it's a historical aspect attached to it that we shall talk about. So before we go into that, let's finish Jannat, Jahannam, Iblis and all that. Yes, sir.
So 2 points. You were saying that on the explanation for the doors to Jannah, that Allah Tabai gave that.
Believes that, yes.
Is he the only person who believes that? I mean, what about all the centuries before him? What did people believe?
There are ahadith that have named the doors, right? Not only that, there are ahadith in Bihar al-Anwar, Safinatul Bihar, and even in Usul al-Kafi that say what is written on each door.
What would that be?
Right. He says, Ayatollah Tabatabai says that fine, these are possible doors in which these things are written. Right. Inni ana Allahu la ilaha illa ana. Right. That I am Allah and there is no Allah, but there is no God but me. Are written on one door, for example, or another door, something else is written. So he says, fine, that does not contradict in any way what we are saying. Right. Now, I have not come across, and it's probably because right now with tafsir, I am relying mainly on Ayatollah Tabatabai. It would be interesting to see if other scholars have mentioned anything, but I haven't come across anything.
What makes sense, the reason I'm saying that, is if a person is a murderer, an adulterer, and a gibbet person, and etc., but he can only go through one door. He can't go through three doors. So it makes sense that these are the paths that take you,
that's
as
true.
Opposed to the actual
that's
position.
That's true. It makes a lot of sense.
But what were the other ulama thinking for the last few hundred years before
you see,
came
you've
up
got,
with this?
You've got to understand that amongst our scholars, up to very recently, and I mean very recently, I would say 200, 300 years ago, we had a lot of akhbaris. Right? What are akhbaris? There are akhbaris and usulis. Akhbaris and usulis are the two distinct schools that our scholars espoused.
Shia
scholars, right? Akhbari are the ones who relied heavily on akhbar. Akhbar meaning ahadith, right? Usulis are those who said, no, akhbar, true. Ahadith are guidance, are indicators, are guidelines. When it comes to the end result, it has to be with aql. Right. Start from Quran, Hadith, then Ijma' and then Aql. That's the, and these Akhbaris were very active in the Safavid dynasty and all that. So what we had was that scholars who were you know, sort of expounding on religious issues using Akhbar only.
They wouldn't think about
it. And they would not think about these things. They would come up with Hadith that says, ke, Hadith mache, ke daraja atche. Hadith ma'ache, Quran ma'ache, right? And then they would say ke ek hadith ma'ache ke eight doors of Jannah. In each door, it is written like this. And so they would make that a rigid concept, until the usulis came and started discussing things in philosophy and theology. And that is where these concepts have developed. Now, from that time up to now. There are many Mufassirin. Ayatollah Tabatabai is not the first Mufassir. Ayatollah Tabatabai is the most recent one. In fact, after Ayatollah Tabatabai also there have been Mufassirin in Shia school of thought. From that time up to now, I haven't come across such a reference.
And these things that are written on the doors, I mean, I don't know what they are, but would they maybe be a sifat of what takes you to heaven or hell?
It's possible, but the way it is written, the hadith, and the akhbaris would go by the word of the hadith. The hadith says it is written on the door. That's it. Right. Somebody, Muhammad has
answered
the question. I've answered the question. Ji.
About Bilal and your lady, about when you are told that you will go in when you wife.
Yeah.
Doesn't that make us subconsciously racist against the black race, that black isn't right to go into Jannah, and white is the better color to go into Jannah?
Let's get one thing right. Let's get one thing right. White and black are colors that denote light and darkness, right? And white is the color of light, whereas black is the color of darkness. it is based on that. That when we talk of Nurani, we're talking of white, because you're talking of illuminated, right? Radiant. It is nothing to do with extrapolating that concept on races of human beings here and saying, yeah, you see, it may be that Bilal may be still black in color, but will be a different kind of black which shows that radiance. And it is that radiance that is important. The color of skin can still be black. I mean, I give you examples. Colin Powell is a black man, isn't he? Have you seen his blackness compared to the Kikuyu of East Africa?
He's not pure black, he's half-caste.
Half-caste, yeah? No, I'm just saying, the concept is not black or white, as in color. The concept is of radiance, radiant with spirituality. That will be so manifest on that day, right? And that the color of everybody, we say in the Holy Quran, on the day when the faces will be blackened, right? It may not necessarily turn black, but more karotheyo. You say that in Kachinjo, more karotheyo, karotheyo. It's just that he is now embarrassed, or he's been insulted, or he's done something bad, more karotheyo. It's a concept we have even in our local culture, right? So that is the concept that has to be understood.
But didn't the Prophet imply by saying to Bilal that you won't go to heaven?
The color you are right now won't go in heaven.
Even though he may bring out that light just now, he said you won't go in that way.
He's no good for
Jannah,
yeah?
Yes.
Anybody?
Never Bilal will become white.
But you look at the black man. The hadith may not be authentic, but I don't want to base that because of this argument. Do you understand? I don't want to link the two. Ji Azad. Ji, Janabe John. Ye kara tha na? Thay jase. Janabe John siwai. You know, when it comes to black and white faces, I don't know. I've heard this from my grandfather. There was a man in Mombasa. So pious. He was sick. Doctors visited him. Doctors from our community. Because he was so pious and religious. Doctors from our community visited him at night after prayers. Can we help you with treatment? And he said no. He was a man who spiritually attached to the 12th Imam. And he said no. My doctor will come. I don't want any treatment for you. And the next day, my grandfather went to see him. He was cured. He said, pure doctor, Imam Zaman. Came at night, helped him treat. I'm talking of Mombasa. We've had those kind of people from the African community. But his face was a very Nurani face. I haven't seen him. That's what my grandfather used to tell me. But like I say, it's an issue that can be discussed. We don't know what is the actual true thing. Chal, let's go for G. I think there is... If I'm not mistaken, Ayatollah Tabatabai doesn't go into length in details. But Ayatollah Khomeini, in his book Arba'una Haditha, has expounded on this. Okay, what are the 7 doors to Jahannam and the 8 doors to Jannah? I may have to find out exactly where in that book. But I'll find that out, inshallah. Month of Ramadan, I have my series, so we'll talk about that, inshallah.
There's one just aspect. You mentioned about black and white and different colors. How do you know that Jannah and Jahannam is physical? It may well be we are talking spiritually, so color doesn't enter into that.
What is your evidence? Did you hear the question?
Yeah.
The question is, how do we know that Jannat and Jahannam is physical? It may well be spiritual. Now I am asking him, what is his evidence? Because in the Quran, everything is physical, right? And if you want to interpret that as spiritual, there has to be evidence to show.
I haven't got evidence to suggest or back my case out. It's just a thought. It's just a thought.
No, thought do come up. But that thought has to come up from somewhere. Okay, bhai, have you heard that in a hadith somewhere? Okay, bhai, these things are not physical because... I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
There is a book in English. I'm trying to recall the name. I have it here in English. It's a book you can all buy from Mursid Rai Badali. From Mufti to Marja, something like that. It's the role of This is about the role of the most supreme authority in Shiite Islam. The Marja is a recent role. When it started, you had a Mufti, and then you had a Qa'im al-Dawla, and you know there was a post by the government. And once the government, the kingdom, you know, the dynasties disappeared, and there was no power, then the Marja was instituted. Now, this is a whole book that talks about this. And in that book, there is reference to scholars. We're talking of Al-Ihsa'is. Now, Al-Ihsa'is were in Iraq not long back. Trying to remember the year. Not long back, I mean we're talking of hardly a century ago. These Ihsais were the ones who started with this concept that Jannah and Jahannam is nothing physical, but it is just a state of spiritual status. So that means after death, that spirit goes over, and if the spirit is in good condition, that is Jannah, and if the spirit is in bad condition, that is Jahannam. And that there is no physical place like Jannah and Jahannam. This is an argument. Right?
Yeah, but I had something else in mind there.
Let me just finish it. Tiyatsi from Ihsa is, it went on to create the faction of Baha'ism, which is the, if you look at Baha'i belief, it is similar to that belief. They don't believe that there is physical Jannah and physical Jahannam. Right? They believe that it is a state of spirituality. However,
yeah, the only argument I was going to say is I've heard it from somebody, I can't remember, I can't pinpoint it. And I contested it to level that dream. You have a dream, you feel it as though it's real, but it's not real. It's a spirit which experiences some sort of experience.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Ayatollah Tabatabai has discussed that and clearly rejected it. For there is no evidence in the Quran to indicate, or in Hadith, to indicate anything other than physical accomplishment of being in Jannah or Jahannam. That the burning of fire and the pain that will be felt, right? The body that performed the act will actually receive the punishment. And therefore, there is no such state where you are in spirit and the spirit will receive the pain. That thing has not been proved. It has been mentioned by many scholars, but not been proved. Ke bhai che a hadith ma che a ke Quran ni ayat dalil che ke a hadith thi dalil che.
Equally, can it be said for physical?
Of course, physical. I can give you evidence from the Quran. Lot of evidence. You see, until and unless there is what we call, we've discussed this, unless there is a karina. There is something where you can say, okay, A, B, G, I, X, A. Now keep the two. How do we tally the two? or ahadith say, let's tell you between the two. If that is produced, then it's a different. But just so you know, there is overwhelming evidence for physical, where Allah says, we will replenish their skins when they burn down. The Quran Majid, in the fire of hell, right? Hasan, Hasan, that was the ayat kal
bidosh. Surah Mulk, ayat 7, it says, إِذَا أُلْقُوا فِيهَا سَمِعُوا لَهَا شَهِيدًا وَهِيَ تَفُورُ. Then they shall be flung into it. They shall hear it roaring while it boils. It's always a physical, because there will be a place where there will be
flung into it. Ahsan, we are digressing, but I will allow one or two more questions. Yeah.
Isn't there a place in the Quran where it says the believers will go to heaven, then they ask, and what will let them know what heaven is? It means that God will be believed in the previous life. And it will be this people who go to heaven, and what will let them know what heaven is?
Yes.
When he says, and what will let them know, isn't there a source implying that it isn't a physical sense, but to get down from the higher peak that we can't perceive?
Okay, the question is here that there is somewhere in the Quran that says the believers will be in heaven, and what makes them think they know what heaven is like? And then it describes heaven, that is gardens under which rivers are flowing. Or the disbelievers will be in hell, and what makes them think they know what hell is? Fire that will burn them and so on, right? It's a very simple question, and it has a very simple answer to it. Probably that may bring about what Haider is also talking about. You see, what physical accomplishments we will have, we cannot imagine. The senses are different. The sense of pleasure that we know about in this world is not what we will get in heaven. Whatever is being talked about is to give us an approximate idea that these are the pleasures you will get there. They may be much more enhanced and magnified, but they will still be physical. Right? So what makes you think you know, that means however much you try and accomplish, you know, to get that sense of pleasure here, you will never be able to match with what is lying there for you. Whether it is Jannah or Jahannam, right? You will never be able to compare. That is what it means. But it doesn't mean a different state altogether where between physical and spirit, there is a difference. Right? You have a question? Thank you. Right. Now, we come to the verses that talk about Dhaif Ibrahim. وَنَبِّئْهُمْ عَنْ ضَيْفِ إِبْرَاهِيمِ, and tell them about the guest of Ibrahim. The story of the guest of Ibrahim is an important story. And it is a story that has been mentioned 5 times in the Holy Quran. 5 different places in the Holy Quran, Allah has repeated the story of the guest of Ibrahim. The first place is in Surah An-Nisa, verse number 9. The second place is Surah Hud, the first place is not Surah An-Nisa. The first place is Surah Hud, verse number 69 to 76. My mistake, sorry. The first place is Surah Hud, verse number 69 to 76. The second place is Surah Al-Hijr, which is 51 to 60. The third place is Al-Ankabut, 31-32. The fourth is As-Saffat, 99-113. And number 5 is Adhariyat, 24-30. These are the places where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has talked to us, or rather has narrated the story of the guest of Ibrahim. We are not talking of the story of Hazrat Ibrahim, we are talking of the story of this particular incident that took place in the life of Ibrahim alayhi salam. That is, the guests came to Prophet Ibrahim. Now, of course, there is importance. From here onwards, you will find that Allah is talking about history. Allah talks about Prophet Ibrahim, Prophet Lut, and then he goes on to talk about the people of Prophet Shu'aib and then the people of Prophet Saleh, right? What kind of punishment they received and why and so on. So then, those are other things we will discuss. But right now, let us discuss about the guests of Prophet Ibrahim al-Islam. We will first look at the history based on all the verses put together. So whatever narration we discuss right now will be based purely on not only this narration in Surah Al-Hijr, but also what is contained in Surah Hud and Surah Safat and Surah Dhariyat and Surah Ankabut, so that we get the whole picture of how the events took place. What happened was that Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam received guests. These guests were, according to Ayatollah Tabatabai, more than two. At least more than two, he says. They were not two, he says, they were more than two, right? And that is because of the use of plural form that is there in the Quran. So he says they must have been more than two. And in one hadith he quotes the names of four angels, which include Jibreel, Mikael, Israfil, and somebody else. There are four angels who came. Now when they came to Prophet Ibrahim al-Islam, we must understand the background of Prophet Ibrahim. Prophet Ibrahim was renowned for his hospitality. Whenever a new face comes, they would rely on the hospitality of Prophet Ibrahim al-Islam to get food and shelter for the night there. So when these four guests came, they were in human shape. Nobody knew them. And it was Prophet Ibrahim al-Islam who saw them first and said, "You are my guests tonight." And he took them home. Again, Prophet Ibrahim al-Islam did not recognize them as angels because they had come in the shape of human beings. Now when they came, remember one thing, Prophet Ibrahim knew Jibreel. Because before this, Hazrat Ismail had been born. And therefore Prophet Ibrahim knew Jibreel, was in contact with Jibreel. Here, what happened was that Prophet Ibrahim did not recognize them because they were in human shape. They came. And immediately, as was the custom of Hazrat Ibrahim al-Islam, the Quran is very clear on that, that he prepared a big meal for them. The word used is ajilin samin, or ajilin, it doesn't say here in Surah Al-Hijr. But this is a lamb, a goat, right? The whole thing, you know the Arab style, whole thing barbecued and fried and ready for eating. And what he saw, you're hungry, aren't you? What he saw was that these angels were not reaching out for the food at all. And the words used for awjasa fi nafsihi khifa. Khifa, if you remember, we had the same words for Prophet Musa alayhi salam when he saw that the magicians who had come to compete against him had actually done the same act that he had done yesterday in front of Fir'aun. Do you remember that? When Prophet Musa went to see Fir'aun, he was asked by Allah to throw his stick, his staff, and it turned into a snake. The next time when he met with the magicians, he asked the magicians to go first. What the magicians did was they threw ropes and it turned into wriggling snakes. Now when he saw that, Prophet Musa sensed a sense of fear in his heart. The same words are used for awjaza fi nafsihi khifatan Musa. Here Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, when he sees that these angels are just sitting there and they are not extending their hands towards food, he felt a sense of fear in him. Now interestingly, was this fear of his property, fear of being attacked or being mugged, fear of what? This prophet who had fought against Namrud, this prophet who had stood against his own people by breaking all the idols, this prophet who had withstood the throwing of him into the fire, he suddenly is frightened because these people did not eat food? How? And this is where Ayatollah Tabatabai tries to explain that fear which is based on personal protection, where we have our personal desires, you know, we have a personal sentiments of protection. Okay, we want to protect our lives, we want to protect ourselves, we want to protect our family, we want to protect our properties. and because of that we fear others. That is not the kind of fear that Prophet Ibrahim was expressing. Prophet Ibrahim was expressing that kind of fear, was sensing that kind of fear, is that these are people who I have offered food, and in that culture, rejection of food was considered to be an insult. It was that fear in him, what wrong have I done to get this insult from these people? It was not fear of anything, they will hit me or they will kill me. Because Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, who had gone through so much, never feared anybody but Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And so what Prophet Ibrahim experienced was that this was the height of insult in his culture, that you bring food to somebody and somebody just sits there with the arms folded, not eating the food. And he felt so slighted at that, so insulted. How could these people do that? And that is the sense of fear that rose in him, that what wrong have I done to be insulted so badly? Right? Now when that happened, angels are angels, and they recognized, they sensed the sense of fear that Prophet Ibrahim was expressing. And that is when they said, that do not fear, we are angels who have come to this world. However, we will learn about the lessons towards the end. Okay, what are the lessons we learn from history? What are the concepts of aqidah and akhlaq and tariqh that we will learn? But let us look at the story. At that time, Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam he realized that these are angels and that they will, they've come for a mission. So he asked them what their mission was. And they said, our mission is to Qawm Lut, to Prophet Lut. Now, there is a verse in the Holy Quran that says that at the back, Bibi Sara was standing there. Bibi Sara is the first wife of Hazrat Ibrahim. Now, she was standing there. The angels turned to her and said that we have come to give you tidings that you will have a child by the name of Ishaq born to you. Fadahikat. Surah Hud says Fadahikat. That means she laughed. Right now, I really would be very interested for us to find out what the translations have said. If I give you the exact verse. It is in Surah Hud, between 69 and 76. I need to see what it has been translated as. Surah Hud is Surah number 11, huh? 69 to 76, in between. Yeah, 71. What has been translated as?
His wife was standing there and she laughed.
She laughed. Is that the normal translation?
Yeah. But then he said, then we gave her the glad tidings of his heart.
Huh?
Then we gave her the glad tidings.
She what?
No, the first.
Part one, stroke 71.
So, and his wife was standing there and she laughed.
She laughed. That's the word I want. She laughed.
It said, then we gave her the good news.
She laughed.
Exactly.
Before.
How did she laugh before? How could she have laughed before? When the tidings were given afterwards. And does it make logical sense, even in language and eloquence, to mention an event before when it has no link? You see, to mention something like laughing before the point has been made. Ayatullah Tabatabai in his Tafsir Mizan says, Fadahikat is not laughing. Fadahikat means she entered into a state of menstruation there. And when she did that, because the angels could sense it, the angels were angels, huh? The angels were people who had vision. Pellato, they recognized the fear expressed by Prophet Ibrahim. This one, when she started menstruating, she was shocked as well. How could she do that? Immediately angels came to tell her, okay, we have come with instructions from Allah to tell you that you will have Ishaq born, and after Ishaq, you will get Yaqub. That is when she asked that I, an old lady, and this old husband of mine? Are you sure we are going to have children? And the angel said, yes, we have come to give this. So that first particular part.
Can she tell the angel, are you sure?
قالت يا ويلتا أألد. It's not challenging. It's surprise. Yeah, it's not like, are you sure? I mean, they've brought tidings. I understand what you're saying. It's just that surprise. And that is why the angels after that was, أَتَ عَجَبِينَ مِنْ أَمْرِ رَبِّي. Right? Are you surprised at the... Sorry, surprise. Yes.
Are you ready for questions?
Yes, yes. Carry on.
When you start from earlier, do all angels have to report to the current...
We'll come to that. Because I said...
You were mentioning that.
No.
They were his guests.
Yes, we have to talk about the lessons we learn. Okay. And amongst the lessons we learn is that this world has somebody who is in command. And when angels come from there, they have to first report to the command. We'll talk about that.
And the sacrifice, when Ishaq was born, had the sacrifice of Ishmael already been done or not yet?
Time scale-wise, it is very fuzzy, but I don't think so.
No, so Ishmael was sacrificed.
Ishmael was born.
No, but his sacrifice was after Ishaq was born. So there were two brothers then.
Yeah.
There were two brothers then. Before Ishmael was sacrificed.
One?
When Ishmael was sacrificed.
It was Ishmael.
His brother was there.
Hajra was there.
No, his brother, Ishaq was there. His half-brother.
It was not with him.
And the thing also in Ayah 52, the word it uses wajilun, which is not faith. So does that have a different?
No, wajil, can't you? It is
52 ma.
52 of?
Well, when
Surah Hijr.
Surah Hijr.
Yeah. Qala inna minkum wajilun. Right? Wajilun is fearful.
It's not the same
scared.
As
scared. How has this been translated?
It
wajil.
Says fear, but yeah. Usually we say fear is faith.
Yeah, khawf is fear. If you see Surah Hud,
yeah.
It says khifa.
Are these identical? I thought they might have a different meaning.
No. It's the same thing. Wajilun is, the word is scared. Like fear, scare, different words. Right, yes.
You already said the meaning of that word, the Lafika meaning. How do they come up with such a drastic change of meaning that she
loved? Yeah, I mean...
That's an interesting question.
Because they're totally opposite,
aren't they? How could they have made such a mistake? You see, the verb dhahika means laughing as well. Huh? But the noun has dhahak and dhihak. Dhihak itself, dhihak is laughing, where dhahak is menstruating. So dhahikat is not laughing. And plus, if you look at the story, it doesn't make sense. First of all, why would Bibi Sarah laugh at the angels? فَبْتَسَمَتْ Fine. If she smiled, fair enough. But to laugh? Even if you are told you're going to have a child and you can't expect a child and you... I mean, she's talking to angels. She's not talking to any ordinary person. Right? So, that is where the difference is. And Ayatullah Tabatabai spends half a page just explaining that all the Mufassirin in the past have referred to, apart from a few, he says, who have corrected it. But the Sunnis and most of the Mufassirin have fallen into the trap of translating this as laughter, but it makes no sense when the good news has not been given.
I don't understand why, if he was insulted that these angels didn't eat his food, he would be scared as opposed to annoyed.
Fine.
Why would the word scared become? I mean, that's got to be another reason. That's like pushing under the carpet.
No. He was scared, meaning that, like I said, that he considered that as an insult. He must have done something to deserve that insult.
Okay.
And he was scared. Okay, what wrong has he done now?
So it was a really bad thing not to eat something.
It was an insult.
Okay,
highest level.
So now, putting it the other way, Rasulullah sent emissaries to people, and when they said, come and eat with us, he said, no, sorry, you're an idol worshipper. They wouldn't have done that either, right? How does we... You know, we don't eat idol worshippers' food, but are there circumstances when, for the sake of not insulting people, we should eat it? Using this as an example?
No,
I mean,
you are going into qiyas now. You know what qiyas is?
I'm sure you
know. Yeah, I'm sure. Qiyas is the danger where people compare one particular part of something with another part. Right? If you have a ruling for namaz that you cannot recite namaz, for example, say if the earth is ghasl, right? Now, can I sleep on it whilst I'm fasting? We say the earth is ghasl. Can I sleep on it? You can't sleep on it. Will my fast be invalid? Namaz will be invalid. Will fast be invalid? Fast will not be invalid. Now, you know, you try to compare things, bringing one rule to another. What you are doing is you are bringing something that happened in the life of Prophet Ibrahim to something that happened in the life of Prophet. Remember one thing, most important thing, the two shariats are different. There at that time, what was right was not necessarily right then. There, for example, what may have been right is to eat of kafirs, for example, during Prophet Ibrahim's time, which was then stopped during the time of the Holy Prophet. These are things that must be taken into account before we try to understand it in this manner.
Also, look at about the incest, you know, when the children of Adam.
No, that's not true.
Right? God allowed it for a certain
thing. He did not allow it for a certain thing.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, he did not allow incest for Adam.
How did that?
Then you can ask Mustafa, but it was incest.
In Juma, I will show you from Juma prayers in Holland Park, there is a thing in English that says, God allowed it for a certain period.
Can we end up talking about this thing the whole night and not know the right thing? These are history. Let's carry on, please. Right. Prophet Ibrahim then started, then asked the question that why have you come here on this earth? And they said that we have come to go to Prophet. We have instructions from Allah to punish the people of Lut. And Prophet Ibrahim asked that, would you punish? Mind you, here is where the words not in this particular surah, but in Surah Hud. The words where Prophet Ibrahim argues with the angels. فَجَادَلَهُمْ Fajadalahum means he argues with the angels. He argues in what way? Because he is protective. Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam had a lot of love for his people. And he did not want this kind of punishment to come on his people. So what he argues with the angels, he says, would you punish a place which has 100 believers? And of course their answer was no. Please, can I have some attention, please? The answer was no. The angel said, no, we will not punish a place which has 100 mu'minin. Prophet Ibrahim then argued and said, no, what about 90? The angel said, no. Prophet Ibrahim said, what about 80? The angel said, no, we will not punish a place that has 80 people. Prophet Ibrahim went on discussing with angels until he came to a figure of one. From 10, he said, what about if there was one believer in that land? Would you still punish that land? And the angel said, no, we will not punish that land even if there is one believer. That is the time when Prophet Ibrahim said that Nafihi Lut, that in that land there is Lut. Prophet Lut was a prophet and a believer. How come you are telling me you will not punish if there was one believer and I can say for sure that Lut is there? So the angel said, "Inna a'lamu biman fiha." We know more than you who is there. But when it comes to Lut, we are going to save him and his family, except his wife. Then we are going to punish the people. So Prophet Ibrahim was concerned about the fate of all the people. He wanted to save that so that they do not get punished. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had so decreed. You find in the riwayat there is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had wanted to send this punishment for a long time now. He held back because of Prophet Ibrahim and Prophet Lut. And as long as they were there and they were pious believers in him, Allah did not want to punish the world. But when it got to a stage when Allah decreed that no, now these people have to be punished, the angels came with the punishment and they said that qada rabbuka bi amrin. Allah has decreed that this thing shall happen. Now there is no going back. We have come here, we are reporting to you, we are going there to Lut so that we may punish them. Now, when they go from there, of course, Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, after talking to him, or talking to them, you know, he doesn't say anything, then he lets them go. They go there, and they come to Prophet Lut. What happens at Lut's place? Prophet Lut was living in Sodom. I mean, I'm sure you've all heard of the town of Sodom. Sodom is in today's Jordan, according to a book I read. I'm not sure whether it is still called Sodom. But Sodom and Amura. Amura is the Gomorrah that we know, right?
Gomorrah.
Huh? Gomorrah. So it's all in Jordan in that region. Prophet Lut was living there under circumstances that we all know about, that he was living in a world, in a place where homosexuals are there, gay people. And it was not only men, it was also women. Got to understand that, that society had got rotten so much so, that not only men, but even the women, such that procreation had stopped, there were no children being born. Prophet Lut al-Islam constantly asked them, tried to invite them to the right path, but they would not listen to anything. Now, when these angels came to Sodom, to Prophet Lut, that was the time when Prophet Lut saw them and he said, Wawela. He did not recognize them, just like Prophet Ibrahim. He did not recognize them. Prophet Lut did not recognize that these were angels who had come to destroy this world. But the moment he saw them, he said, Wawela, because he wanted to take them as guests. They were travelers. He wanted to take them as guests, but they were young and handsome people, and he said, Aviya. Manasone, how can I stop my people from doing what they normally do to travelers? And that was one fear in him that is expressed in Surah Hud, I think. It is expressed more in Surah Hud than it is in Surah Al-Hijr. If you look at Surah Hud, ولما جاءت رسلنا لوطا سيء بهم وضاق بهم ذرعا وقال هذا يوم عصيب. عصيب is a day that is full of calamities. A very bad day. I mean, you know, a very bad day is putting it mildly. A day that is full of calamities. Why? He had only seen them. He only wanted to take them as guests, but because that was the state of affairs that he was living in Sodom. Now, these guests came to his house. He told them, historically in history says, he told them that, look, you eat a meal and go away from here. It's safer for you. And they said, no. They said, we are so tired, we want to live here. We want to sleep the night here. Up to now, they had not told him who they were. Lut's wife, Prophet Lut's wife, was the one who was the link between Prophet Lut's household and the people outside. As much as Prophet Lut would like to hide his guests, he was a person who was very hospitable as well. He invited guests, he helped the wayfarers, the travelers, to sleep a night, give them shelter. But the link between his household, what goes on in his house, and the outside society was his own wife. And they had a system of signaling that at night she would leave a light outside the house to indicate to the outsiders that there are guests today. And if it was daytime, then she would light firewood so that there was smoke coming out from the chimney. Uh-huh, there are guests today. These were the signals she had agreed upon with the rest of the society to betray Prophet Lut and his guests. So when these four angels came in, again, like her style, she did that. When she did that, people gathered around his house. Now, if you look at Surah Hud, you will find some very interesting questions, because these are solid questions, questions that need thinking, questions that even we ordinary people would ask, that why is it Prophet Lut said this? when these people surrounded the household of the Prophet Lut, they said, "We want nothing but your guests." Now, they were into a habit of raping men. Right? This was the level to which they had got. And that any newcomer is like a very crude example, but if you say, you know, you talk about prison life in America and you read about that, you feel ki ani khair nahi ko na wo ani shar jayo. That's the kind of anybody who comes there, right, would be raped by men. Now, when Prophet Lut was inundated with these people coming, you know, the society that we want your guests, you know what we want. Prophet Lut alayhi salam said, فَعَرَضَ إِلَيْهِمْ بَنَاتِي هَذَا قَالَ هَذَا بَنَاتِي قَالَ يَا قَوْمِ هَا أُولَا إِبَنَاتِي هُنَّ أَطْهَرُ لَكُمْ فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ وَلَا تُخْزُونِي فِي ضَيْفِي. This is verse number 78. He says, "Oh my people, these are my daughters. They are more pure for you. And do not disgrace me with my guests." Now it is an action that everybody would ask question, that how could Prophet Lut alayhi salam talk about his daughters like that? A madrasa. You know, it shows how many people have read the story. How many people have read the story of Lut? Like, anybody else? See, the madrasa notebooks. It's in the madrasa notebooks. Got you. Barabar se. Even if it was nikah, first of all, there are ulama, scholars, Sunni scholars, who question this, that Prophet Lut was offering them women as opposed to men. Right? For the same act. And Ayatollah Tabatabai says, how can a prophet give an option that is illicit as much as the original action? Because zina is also haram. Luwat is haram, zina is also haram. So it doesn't make sense that the prophet is offering women as alternatives to men. No. Fine. We take into granted that he meant nikah. Marry my daughters, as opposed to raping men, right? But would it befit a prophet's status to stand up and offer his daughters to such people?
He offered it to the
who are known man rapists.
Not that known, but the last word says that the Pope, is there among you not a single right-minded man?
He's giving his daughters to the community so they don't rape the English.
Sorry?
No, I was confused about the story. He's offering his daughters to the society.
To the society.
Instead of the guests.
So, what is that? Is that an alternative as women compared to men? Because if you say that, then that would be without nikah, and it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, right? You can't, a prophet cannot offer an alternative that is as illicit as the original act. And therefore, most likely, as you say, he was saying, marry my daughters, right? But according to one other tafsir, which is not only Ayatollah Tabatabai, but many before them trying to explain this, saying, based on the hadith of the Holy Prophet, when the Holy Prophet says, "Ana wa Ali abawa hadhihi al-ummah," that I and Ali are the fathers of this ummah, meaning that every prophet is the father of his ummah. And when Prophet Lut was talking about daughters, did not mean his daughters, for he had only two daughters. How could he offer only two daughters to the whole crowd of the society? And therefore the answer was that what he meant was these women who are also being the father, spiritual father of the society, these women are better for you. So he was referring to the women of the society by saying, هَاُلَا أَبَنَاتِي أَطْهَرْ لَكُنْ هُنَّ أَطْهَرْ لَكُنْ. Right? not like offering his own daughters, because he had only two, and how could he offer two daughters to them? Plus, it doesn't befit the status of a prophet to actually offer his daughters to such a public that is bent on raping men, and suddenly he says, I offer you my daughters. It doesn't click well. So the most plausible explanation, which even Ayatollah Qabatabai accepts, is that this is the explanation.
But why does he say
my image? Yes.
Did you not say that the women were also
Karam?
The men knew that the
That is why. Wa innaka ma nurid. You know what we want. We have no interest in these ladies.
The men knew that he wanted the woman, and I think you must have known that the men don't want the woman. They want men.
Hujjat tamam kar. Ji. So.
So, Baba, here I look at the family sath nikah kari jaiz rite tamari ichha puri kar.
This is one option. This is one explanation. Ke emni dikriyo sathe nikah karine jaiz rite tamari ichha puri kar. That is one explanation. But even then, it doesn't make sense for two reasons. Ek to be dikriyo hoy kiri itna badhani sa me pesh kari. Number one. Number two, ke paygambar ni hasti. Koi par paygambar. Ke emni dikriyo ne itna jaharan ye awa loko sathe. It doesn't befit the status of a prophet. Right. What happened next was that, talking about the case of Prophet Lut, what happened next was that these angels then came to tell Prophet Lut that we are angels and we have in fact come to punish these people. Right? And in that flurry of action, what they did was they were able to hide themselves, to blind the people, so that the people who came out looking for these guests could not find them. So they went back home. Once they went back home, these angels reappeared and told Prophet Lut alayhi salam that in the darkness of night, after midnight, you and your family go away from here, except your wife who will not be saved. Now, here you will find that in the Torah, the Torah, the Old Testament, you find the story where the wife of Lut also left with Lut, but she turned back to see, because they were told, do not turn back. She turned back to see and she became a pillar of salt. That is the punishment meted out. They agree, the Jews also agree, that Lot's wife, right, Prophet Lut, they call Lot, Lot's wife was punished, but she was turned into a pillar of salt because she turned back, contravening the directives given by the angels that do not even look back. Right? Here, according to this if you read verse Surah Hud again, verse number 82. قال يا لوط قالوا يا لوط إن رسل ربك لن يصلوا إليك فأسر بأهلك بقطع من الليل ولا يلتفت منكم أحد إلا امرأتك. Verse number 81. Yeah. We are messengers of your Lord, and therefore flee you with your family. And do not look back. Do not turn back. Right? And then it says, except your wife, for she will get exactly what is reserved for them. What they will get, she will also get. إِنَّ مَوْعِدَهُمُ الصُّبْحُ أَلَيْسَ الصُّبْحُ بِقَرِيبٍ. Their destined time for punishment is the morning. And that morning is very close by. فَلَمَّا جَاءَ أَمْرُنَا جَعَلْنَا عَالِيَهَا سَافِلَهَا وَأَمْطَرْنَا عَلَيْهَا حِجَارَةً مِّن سِجِّيلٍ مَّنْضُودٍ مُسَوَّمَةً عِنْدَ رَبِّكَ وَمَا هِيَ مِنَ الظَّالِمِينَ بِبَعِيدٍ. When the punishment came, when the time of the punishment came, وَجَعَلْنَا عَالِيَهَا سَافِلَهَا, we overturned the whole place. And then it rained stones, black small stones. That was the punishment meted out to the people of Lut.
It's not all got the punishment. Got the punishment. But these people got something more from the Lord. Why was that? All the other people, the people of Samoa, punished. Samoa's come, they got punished for this crazy. But when it comes to Komelud, God says that the stones have was marked on the Lord, like a rubber stamp. Why?
Perhaps because of the gravity of their act.
That word, turn back, yaltafit.
Yeah.
Does it mean look back, turn back? What is that exactly does it mean?
Yaltafit is to turn. Iltafata is to pay attention.
Not to return.
No, not to return. To turn.
Physically.
Physically.
Not necessarily look back.
No. That is the concept where Torah, when they say that Lot's wife looked back.
What was the significance of asking them not to turn back? Because obviously, if they said go, they would
In fact, you know one thing, that they were asked to move out at night time. The punishment took place in the morning, right? But they were told to go away and not to look back. That means don't even, you know, have anybody, any attachments, not even look back away. You know, can't hear the last memories.
So was it metaphorical, like you're saying? Don't attach yourself.
Possibly.
Is it, wasn't all woman's
there is no physical significance of looking back. Karan, if you look back, there's nothing.
No, that's what I'm saying, because every word Allah uses has a meaning. I'm trying to see, you know, what's the significance here. Why this way, not another way?
It's like when I become a changed person, I say, I changed on this day because of this incident, and since then I have never looked back. Doesn't mean physically look back. It means I have never looked back. I have never gone back to what was.
His wife
was
looking back.
Yes.
He
Prophet Lut know about his wife. The Prophet Lut know about his wife, yes. Wow. You know the question he's asking. No, I'll tell you why. He talks from a present mentality. It's like the question when Mullah Marhum always used to say when he went to Canada the first time. And he was talking of Paif, you know, and the Prophet visited Paif. The Arabs there threw stones at him. And a young child stood up to ask the question and said, why didn't he sue them? Right? Because that was the mentality. The Prophet could have sued them. Well, similarly, when you talk of divorce, that time, the many prophets, it's not only Prophet Lut, many another prophet was right.
My question is, if they are prophets, and why did they marry such women? Did they not know what the fool was?
Please.
Our prophet.
Our prophet married Aisha. Son.
Yeah.
The prophet. Apna prophet in history to Parvoita, it has a different connotation.
That
you know why he married Aisha.
Yeah.
Right. So similar reasons could be why Prophet Lut married a certain girl.
They
were leaders of the society. They had to have some political dimensions even in their social life. Right? So the one thing you got to remember that the best lesson we learn that however close you are to a prophet, even if you are next family, again, next a spouse or a child or a son or a daughter or a brother, it is not going to make you safe. It has to be your own actions that will save you.
Was another old woman saved?
Huh?
Was other than
Quran ma kya lekin nahi ho story ma wahi nahi chala the kai story
ajuz
ajuz
there is I don't know
I read the story of Lut as well I couldn't find I have heard in the past that there was one place it's not necessarily Lut. There was one place where the angels had been commanded to overturn the place. Mind you, that overturning of the place had happened many times, not only Prophet Lut's time. And the angels came down and saw that there was this person with a white beard lying down.
Okay.
Right? And the angels were told, wait until he moves face, until he turns away from them. So when he turned, that was when Allah told them. This I have heard, again I haven't read. But that is nothing to do with this story. Jai Hidam.
is it true, the soldier emissary Mughlaya, when they sent a emissary to Ethiopia or something, which was passing through the Dead Sea area, which is where...
Probably, yes.
They said that when you cross this area, you should be harola, you should be double marching.
Uh-huh.
Is it true that our Prophet also recommended that that area, should they should not spend night there, or they should move fast from that area?
In the Dead Sea.
Near the Dead Sea area. Which is where Malud...
Where this punishment took
place. Is it true? Have you heard it?
No, I haven't heard it. I know that area is true, the Bahr al-Mayyit, which is called the Dead Sea. But not that it is makruh to sleep a night there, or you should harwala while you're there. I haven't heard about that.
Can we go back to Hijr 57 for a second?
Hijr 57. Let's go back to Hijr 57.
When Sheikh Ibrahim says, what is your business then, O messengers? What gave him the idea that they had more business? Because they already told them, we came to give you good news.
No, they had not told them.
They told them before that, hey?
No.
After
they told them. After.
The black tidings to... In 54 they tell him, in 55 they tell him.
Uh-huh.
Then 57 he says, what is your business then? What gave the impression they had more business?
No, I thought the angel only came down for destroying and...
I mean, they came to Bibi Maryam only for the sole reason of telling her the good news.
No. He's right. What is his question is, what made Prophet Ibrahim feel that they have more than just this mission of telling the good news? Simple answer to that. There were four of them. To give a good tiding to Prophet Ibrahim, you need only one angel to come and tell him, Jibreel. When four of them came, that means a team had come. In action, eh? A squad.
But having also, that's the other, is there a significance in having four angels? I mean, when Jibril could have done that all by himself.
Yes. So is there a significance?
I mean, why four and three and two?
This is God's will.
I'm sure it is, but...
How do you know Jibril could have done it himself?
I'm asking. So does that mean that physically one angel cannot do it by himself? Which is then what you're saying?
Yes. I feel that there are... In angels, with angels, we've done this in the past, that angels have helpers and angels are not as able as Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah could have done it without sending angels.
Okay, Mata Samacha, Abba Mata, you know, when you go and give some bad news or something.
You go in hordes,
yeah, you go in a bit of stride, I think. Or volume.
You see, you discussed that before. When you said that either Allah does something by himself, in which case he uses the word Ana, or he uses his system.
Nahnu.
And to understand this is to understand his system.
This is where the angels came. And the angels also, I believe, that these were four of the leaders of angels. And they would have used thousands of other angels to get the work done. Because if you remember, we discussed that in the system of cause and effect, all that is taking place is an angel that has been created by Allah to run the effect for a certain cause, right? So every movement that takes place, every dynamism that takes place is because of an angel that Allah has created. Now here, these four are sent to, if you put it in today's multi-terms, to oversee an operation. But this is what has to be done.
How do we know there were four?
Huh? No, how do I know? From a hadith. Like I said, the verse indicates plural, and therefore it means more than two. Right? But there is a hadith that has named four angels. I have the names, yes. You want to know the names?
Yeah.
Jibreel. La hawla wa la quwwata Jibreel, Mikael, Israfil, and Karubil. Told you the fourth one was a difficult one. Is Jibreel, Mikael, Israfil, and Karubil. This is Nusul al-Kafi, An Abi Abdullah alayhi salam, the sixth ulama. Inna Allah ba'atha arba'ata amlaq fi ahlaqi qawmi Lut. He sent four messages, four angels.
Has this sort of punishment stopped because after the coming of the prophets,
We discussed that last time. Yes. We discussed that as well. Like, that kind of punishment where a whole community will be wiped out. A whole ummah of the Prophet will be wiped out. I don't think Muslim over Azam Niyami. No. That is not true. What is true is where prophets had whole communities wiped out, like Nuh alayhi salam, like Lut, like Shu'aib, like Saleh, right? That stopped. Akhi Musalmani ummat ek gama wipe out. That was a promise made by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.